It's nothing personal,
the senior partner said, gazing at him as though he'd just found him stuck to the sole of his shoe.
It's a simple question of arithmetic. You're 7 billable hours short of your target for the month, which gives us a nice, straightforward equation. T minus 7 equals the sack.
Sorry, he added, with a certain lack of sincerity.
Clear your desk and be out by noon.
John didn't have much to take away with him. A few books, a cheap whalebone slide rule, a framed cameo portrait of his mother. The doorman sold him an old wooden box to put them in and some string to make a rudimentary carrying strap. He slung the box over his shoulder and climbed down the long ladder to ground level, a free man.
Bustards, he thought cheerfully. Ah, well.
He left the forest, whistling a sprightly tune, and headed for the halfling village, a few miles down the old north road. There he stopped at the carpenter's shop and asked the man there to make him a sign.
A what?
Flat piece of wood, John explained. About 1 foot by 8 inches, 1/2 inch thick, oak or ash, something hard wearing. And I want you to carve my name on it.
The carpenter frowned. You mean letters and stuff?
Is that a problem? The carpenter blinked.
I can do letters, he said. No bother at all. Come back in an hour.
So John went to the Pink Oliphant for a coffee and a slice of simnel cake, and when he went back, the carpenter was just slapping on a coat of linseed oil.
Like it?
He asked proudly.
John looked at it. John J. O. N. The Liar, L-I-A-R. Attorney, A-T-U-R-M-Y, at law, L-O-R.
John considered the literacy level of his target demographic.
It'll do, he said. How much do I owe you?
That'll be 2d. Which was precisely half of his total capital. But what the hell? Every mighty tree was once a tiny pip, and some of the greatest lawsuits of all time have grown out of trivial incidents, like an idiot not reading the label or putting his foot in a pothole. At any rate, he had a sign. Now all he needed was somewhere to hang it up. He asked around, but nobody knew of vacant premises to let. He asked at the inn, but they told him there was no room. All they could suggest was a lowly cattle shed out the back, which was a bit lacking in the structurally sound walls and weather-tight roof department. But if he wanted it, he could have it 2d a month, 2 months payable in advance. That came to exactly 4d, which by some strange coincidence was exactly how much money he had. An omen.
Deal, he said.
Really?
The innkeeper quickly wiped the grin off his face.
I mean, that's settled. Splendid. I'll see you in 2 months then.
Something is usually better than nothing at all. So, though his office was a stable and his desk was a manger and his filing cabinet was a stall, and the best he could do for a door was 2 of old feed sacks slung over 1 bit of rope, in spite of all that, he was back in the business. Only this time without 1 bunch of pointy-eared millstones round his neck. His own boss. Master of his fate and captain of his soul.
Gosh.
To begin with, business was quiet. The chickens left in a huff, and the pig moved out to the broken-down tool shed on the other side of the yard, choosy, presumably, about the company it kept. But the rats didn't seem to mind him at all, which was broad-minded of them. Then, one night, as he was lying on his pile of vintage straw, looking up through a hole in the roof at one especially bright star he couldn't remember having noticed before, he heard a strange flapping noise, followed by a stifled curse. It only took him a moment to identify the sound as that made by a man trying to knock on a sack hung over a bit of string.
"Come in," he called out. "It's open."
Light filled the shed, coming from a lantern in the hand of a tall figure in dark robes.
"Are you the liar?" said a deep voice.
John pulled a face, which was fortunately masked by the shadows.
"No," he said, "I'm a legal practitioner and notary public."
The stranger looked at him, and his eyes were a pale green gleam.
"Not the liar?"
"No."
"Well, you would say that, wouldn't you?"
"Mind if I sit down?"
John shrugged.
"Pull up a straw bale and be my guest. Now then, what can I do for you?"
"I need someone to tell lies for me. Convincingly. With style."
"Sorry," John said. "I can't do that. It's against my code of professional ethics."
The stranger studied him for a moment.
"That was very good," he said. "If I didn't know any better, I'd have thought you meant it."
"I do, really. If they catch me distorting evidence or perverting the course of justice, they'll take away my license and that'll be that. It's just not worth it."
The stranger frowned.
"Really?"
"Really and truly."
"You're not a professional liar, then?"
"No."
"But that's what you say you are, on your sign outside."
"I was lying."
"Ah." "Oh, well," the stranger said.
And as he stood up to leave, he made a soft clinking noise, as of coins jingling together in his pocket.
"Sorry to have wasted your time."
"That said," John said smoothly, "what I can do, and in fact do exceptionally well, is present a body of purported facts, which I then invite the opposition to prove to be false, on the understanding that, should they fail to do so, my version of events is deemed to be true by default."
"That's not lying."
"Of course not. It's a dialectic-based methodology for ascertaining the truth based on adversarial debate, founded on time-honoured rules of evidence and procedure, and governed by hallowed conventions, such as the presumption of innocence and the burden of proof, the final outcome of which is universally regarded by society as tantamount or equivalent to the truth, even though it usually isn't. Quite different, obviously."
The man nodded slowly.
"So what you're saying is, if you tell people a load of stuff, and you can get them to believe you, or at least put it in such a way that they can't prove it's all garbage, then it becomes the truth."
He whistled softly.
"Neat trick."
"Indeed. Which is why I can say, hand on heart, that I don't tell lies. Honest as the day is long, me, especially the day at midwinter at the North Pole, trust me,
I'm a lawyer.
Sounds like the sort of work people would be prepared to pay a lot of money for.
It has been known, yes.
You any good at it?
The best, John said simply.
Really? In which case, what are you doing in a dump like this?
John smiled. Starting out on my own. Which means, he said, you have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to engage my services before they become too shatteringly expensive. I mean, you could chance it and come back in a week, and who knows? You might be able to afford me, or you might not. Up to you, really. I mean, are you a born gambler?
All right, the stranger said. How much do you charge?
For straightforward presentation of true facts, shilling an hour.
That's a lot of money.
John's smile spread like oil on water. If I charged less, how would you know I was any good?
The stranger's face was more or less invisible in the shadows. But John was fairly sure, on the balance of probabilities, that he was smiling too.
Agreed, he said.
I can see now. Less than a shilling an hour wouldn't be enough. All right. Consider yourself hired.
A peal of bells rang out in John's heart. At least he attributed the vague rumbling to joy, rather than the interval since he'd last eaten. Accentuate the positive. It's the only way.
Excellent, he said. Now, what would you like me to do?